You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up tonight on the Ideas Network, join us starting at 7 for NPR's ongoing coverage of the Republican National Convention, the speeches, the issues, and the controversies. That's tonight after 7 on the Ideas Network.
First, one of the big questions in this presidential race has been, can Donald Trump get Democratic voters to cross party lines and vote for him? Trump made that case during the primary campaign. Here he is talking to Don Lemon. This is last fall on CNN.
Me, more than anybody else, I'll go across lines. I think I'll have a lot of Democrats. You know, Reagan had Democrats for Reagan. It was a very big group of people and a very big block.
I think I'll have a lot of Democrats
for Trump. I think I will have a lot of Democrats voting for me, far more than any Republican for the last long period of time.
Our next guest says it's becoming conventional wisdom that Trump could lure working class Democratic voters in key Midwestern states, what some people call the Rust Belt, and that includes Wisconsin. But he says the Trump campaign shouldn't be too quick to count those votes.
Paul Fanlon joins us now. He's editor and executive publisher of The Capital Times. His piece on Rust Belt politics is linked on the Central Time Facebook page. Paul, welcome back to the show.
Robin, Veronica, it's really great to be back with you.
Well, are we seeing a lot of this kind of analysis saying, hey, Donald Trump is going to win over these voters in the so-called Rust Belt?
We really are. In my column, which ran a couple of weeks ago, I cited several major pieces, and they were from mainstream prominent publications like the New York Times, The Atlantic, The Economist. And just yesterday, the Wall Street Journal had an opinion piece by a Republican strategist headlined Trump's Best Path to Victory, and it outlined that Rust Belt strategy. So it really has become a conventional wisdom in the national press over the last 2 or 3 months, I think.
And what's the thinking behind that? Why are these analysts saying that Trump has such appeal in places in the Midwest?
Well, part of it is that our minority populations are not as large as they are in some parts of the country. So Trump has apparently a very big appeal with particularly white men without a lot of education who are angry and feel they've been left behind by the global economy, and that's, you know, sort of the relationship to the term Rust Belt, that there's this concentration of these kind of folks. And when we're talking about the Rust Belt, we're mostly talking about Wisconsin, Ohio, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, where the big numbers of electoral votes are in a presidential election. So that's where I think it primarily grows from.
Now, before we get to your problems with that argument itself, you don't even like the phrase Rust Belt, especially as applied to us here in Wisconsin. Why not?
Well, I really don't. I take offense at it, and I think that people on both sides of the political aisle would take offense at it. Last month, a friend of mine, Dave Cheslevich, who served as 2 terms as Madison's mayor, now writes a column for the local Alternative Weekly, complained about the use of Rust Belt and sent me an email saying that I ought to join him, and I eventually did and mentioned it. I think it's demeaning and not descriptive of who we are. The upper Midwest has, as we all know and most of your listeners know, lots of diversity, and it's not limited to struggling areas of Detroit or Gary or Cleveland, but it's much different than that. And the term really took hold. I did a little research on it, a little online research. It really took hold in the 1980s when manufacturing collapsed. The manufacturing economy in the country really collapsed. And, of course, an awful lot of that major manufacturing was concentrated in those upper Midwestern states.
But you say this is how the East Coast looks at us here in flyover country in a lot of ways.
I think it is. Yes, I think another thing too that I didn't mention in the column, and it's a little bit off point, but I think it's useful for this discussion, and that's what I think is the national media's tendency to create what oftentimes are false narratives that you really can't, as media is incented to write about conflict, write about movement, write about what's new. And Hillary Clinton has not a huge lead nationally, but a lead, and even in the so-called Rust Belt states tends to lead. But the But there's an incentive, I think, by national media to want to make the race closer or to do false, what I call false equivalencies in terms of analyzing the race and covering the race. So I think there's a problem with that, too. I think that because the Rust Belt scenario is pretty much arguably Trump's only path to winning the White House, I think it gets more attention than it might otherwise if there were other paths for him to get the White House. If I could segue into my major problem with the Rust Belt analysis, it's as if they think that so there's an angry white male cohort that doesn't have a lot of education, that really identifies with Donald Trump, and they're going to come out. Some of them haven't voted before, and they're going to come to the polls in huge numbers. But a lot of times that seems to ignore the opposite effect that Donald Trump has on women, particularly educated women, to offset that. The most recent Marquette University Law School poll, for example, has Clinton with a 38% advantage among white college-educated women, which is mind-boggling. It compares to 13% for Clinton 4 years ago. So, and the analysis that showed up in one of the pieces I read, and I also got into this a little bit more, is the notion that the Republican, well, you know, let's go back to the fact that Trump lost Wisconsin to Ted Cruz 48-35, that the traditional Republican in Wisconsin did not embrace Donald Trump's approach to things, but also that even if Trump runs much more strongly than Republicans of the past among working class folks throughout much of the small communities and rural Wisconsin, he's likely to run much less strongly in the affluent suburbs of Milwaukee and other suburbs, suburban areas around the metropolitan areas in the state. So I think the analysis looks at one side. I also think there's a tendency for these national reporters to come into our region and see only those who are out for Trump in a primary race and infer that that's much more broadly what our population looks and thinks like.
Talking to Paul Fadland, editor and executive publisher at the Capital Times, looking at Rust Belt politics in states like Wisconsin. He doesn't like the phrase Rust Belt, but how things will play out for Donald Trump, whether he has, as many national analysts say, a shot at winning in states like Wisconsin. Paul, let's look at Donald Trump's message and how it looks to the communities that these analysts are talking about. He is not generic Republican, as they sometimes put in polls. He's focused on immigration, the wall, talk about Muslims, talk about terrorism, things like that. And in these national analyses you're looking at, people are saying, oh, that's going to resonate with these disaffected white workers in places like Wisconsin, Ohio, Michigan, elsewhere.
Yeah, Rob, as you know, I think I've been around watching and covering, observing and involved in state politics for more than 35 years. And while there are ideological pendulum swings in how we vote in this state, I just don't see the appeal of that beyond. Certainly there's an appeal to the certain cohort, but I don't see that appeal growing very much from where it's already been. Trump is also very strongly anti-trade, which puts him in direct conflict with a lot of traditional Republicans in the state. So it's a complicated conversation and a complicated message.
And look at Republicans here in the state, many of whom opposed leading Republicans who opposed Donald Trump in that primary election. They backed, they really converged around Ted Cruz in that race. How do you see their efforts to support Donald Trump? A lot of people endorsing him, but it seems awkward.
Yeah, it's tepid. Their support is tepid at best. It's hard to imagine the Republicans in the state providing a lot of outside support. I think Trump's best hope is that he creates he and Sanders both talked about creating a revolution, that there's a whole new type of voter who is motivated to come out to register and come out and shock the world. But I do not see the Republican establishment being enthused, and I think a lot of them are looking beyond this election to determine how the Republican Party in Wisconsin and nationally in the future future reconstitutes itself.
Talking to Paul Fadlin from the Capital Times, his piece on Donald Trump and working voters in the Midwest is linked on the Central Time Facebook page.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you think that Donald Trump has a shot in battleground states in the Rust Belt, even states that might usually go for Democrats in the presidential election? Does he have a chance of winning here in Wisconsin? And has his campaign swayed you to vote for or against him and the Republican Party this fall? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you in just a moment here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're continuing our conversation with Paul Fadlin from the Capital Times. He says there's widespread speculation that Donald Trump will bring in working class voters in so-called Rust Belt states, maybe like Wisconsin. He says that's mostly wrong.
You can join in at 800-462-1234. Are you a usually Democratic voter thinking of voting for Donald Trump, or a usually Republican voter thinking of not voting for him? Do you consider Wisconsin a Rust Belt state? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page, where we've got a link to Paul's piece, by the way. We will go to our callers now. We've got Jim on the line in Rice Lake. Jim, hi.
Hi, thank you for having me. I appreciate your guest comments. I think that people forget that, you know, Wisconsin has voted Democratic all the way back to Dukakis, so it is a strongly Democratic leaning in presidential politics. My question is, I agree with the guest comments about, you know, the unlikelihood of a Trump victory, but what if these police shootings continue? Hopefully, and we pray that they won't, but if they could, that not be a game change, you know, driving angry, frightened white voters into the Trump camp? In short, could we have 1968 all over again?
Jim, thanks for the call. That or continued terrorist attacks. Mm-hmm. Some people have pointed to dramatic terrorist attacks. What do you think, Paul?
Yeah, I remember 1968. I was old enough to really follow it, and I think it's an excellent question by the caller. I think that the surround right now is really, really difficult between the domestic events and international terrorism. But I also think that as the campaign goes along, there'll be a tendency to look and say, okay, well, what does that mean? I've written a piece that hasn't been published yet. So the Republican convention was about law and order last night. So what does that mean? Does that mean more police with heavier arms, military-type arms? And is that going to discourage a single deranged person from making an attack? The international attacks in Nice last week was one person. Building a war, cracking down, whatever that means, on Muslims, it just seems to me that I think you can make the case, Hillary Clinton will be making the case, that all you'll be doing is to, by that rhetoric and then strong action, is to foster more recruitment of people who might be tending toward terror. It's not like any time in my lifetime in terms of the threat. The threat can be on an individual level, and all the tough talk and arm waving, and I think that's a case that can be made over the next few months. That do I really want to risk kind of the future of the country and the world with this rhetoric, which may feel good, but what's behind it? And I think we'll get more of that as the campaign goes along. It's a good question.
Thanks for that call. We'll go next to John in Eau Claire. John, hi.
Hello.
What do you think?
I personally think that both the Republican and the Democrat have ignored the American people long enough. I think the American people need to band together and vote anything independent. I mean, literally anybody that's running independent, just to get that message across that we're done with the games that they play in the top.
John, thanks a lot for that call. Frustration with both parties there, and people have pointed toward that kind of frustration for the unexpected success of Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side, for the unexpected and greater success of Donald Trump on the Republican side.
I actually, in many respects, agree with the caller. I don't think the Democratic Party over the last few years has been particularly strong or effective. The Democrats would say that President Obama has been handicapped by a recalcitrant Congress. But I think the future And I wrote this in the column, but, you know, prescriptively, I think we need investment in infrastructure, in education and job training, tax incentives, adequate safety nets for individuals, and we need to finance it with a tax system that recognizes growing wealth disparities. That isn't, but this is a year that has been rewarding more of the kind of voice that that last caller provided, which is anger and let's blow it up and figure out how to put it back together later. And so that is a wild card in this year. I acknowledge that.
John, thanks for that call. Paul, in our last couple of minutes, I want to throw you a bit of a curveball. Polarized politics, polarizing election, Wisconsin, big partisan divide here. Mm-hmm. Is it possible for someone from either party to come in with some kind of unifying message in the state and get elected or win the electoral votes of Wisconsin while they're doing it?
Well, probably most of your listeners can guess that I'm going to say the person who's best positioned to do that is Hillary Clinton by the kinds of actions around infrastructure and job training and education that I just talked about. So a competent, experienced kind of leadership that, frankly, I think President Obama has demonstrated throughout the last 8 years. So I think that can happen. I do think a question for another show down the road is within the state, in state politics, how can we come back together? Because we are very far apart.
Yeah, you mentioned the pendulum swinging back and forth, but in a way we're almost all swinging on our own pendulums right now. They're not even on the same string anymore.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, I couldn't have imagined a Republican Party that would go through the 17 candidate, debacle or spectacle that we've seen over the last year or so. But the Democratic Party is also has its issues that way and doesn't have, you know, beyond Hillary Clinton, who are the next generation of leaders. We've created through the culture, through social media, we've created a surround. I was having lunch today with a very experienced Democratic operative, and he's been talking to potential candidates for governor people kind of like the concept of running, but then they look at the personal cost and the toxicity, and it's puts them off.
Well, something for us to talk about again in the future. Paul, thanks a lot for joining us today. Appreciate it.
It was really fun. Thank you both.
We've been talking to Paul Fanland. He's editor and executive publisher of the Capital Times. There's a link to his piece on Rust Belt politics. You can find that over at the Central Time Facebook page.